I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and I am so excited about today's interview. Alex Dilling is one of the most accomplished chefs in the industry today. Born in London, raised in the United States, Alex became a household name in the UK, gaining 2 Michelin stars at the iconic Greenhouse restaurant. A master of combining luxurious taste and meticulous precision, Alex's style has graced every major city from New York, London, Paris, and Dubai. He's chatting with me today, and I really hope you enjoy this interview. Alex, where are you right now?
I'm at home in London, and thank you for the very nice introduction.
Glad you liked it. So yeah. How's lockdown been for you? It's a third lockdown. It's been crazy.
Third lockdown. I think so far this one is the trickiest. It really feels like everything is just stopped completely. During the first 2, it was a feeling like things were still kind of happening. I was fortunate to still do some events abroad, which was fantastic to work with some colleagues and do some different things. But now it seems it's really just stopped. So I think
come to a halt.
Yeah, come to a halt completely. So it's really like finding again that will to just, you know, be calm and not do too much. And it's just such a dramatic change, especially for people in our industry to not be moving. So
yeah. And I actually listened to an interview with you the other day, and it was with someone else, and you were saying that, you know, during the first lockdown, I think you were doing a lot of the creative process of your, you know, of the recipes and new dishes and that kind of thing. You must have a book completely full of recipes now.
I mean, I'm always like thinking about stuff. I mean, I think most chefs, you know, we're always like that creative process is constantly going, right? So writing all that stuff down is key. So, I mean, I'm kind of a notebook freak. I have notebooks all over the place and piled up, and I keep them all. But yeah, I have a lot of ideas that I hope to put into fruition soon. Yeah.
Yeah. And where are you finding your inspiration at the moment?
You know, it just can happen anywhere when you're reading other cookbooks from other great chefs, watching a TV program, from cooking at home, it can happen. Just the kind of desire to work with certain products that you miss. So, yeah, it can happen anywhere.
Yeah. Well, Alex, I know you're incredibly selective when it comes to interviews. So thank you so much for giving me your time.
No, I'm happy to see you again.
Now, I'm sure everyone has heard of you. You're the chef responsible for earning the Greenhouse 2 Michelin stars. But this is an opportunity to really sort of get to know you on a more personal level. So should we start from the beginning?
Yes.
Is that okay? So yeah, I know your mother and your grandfather played a huge role in cultivating your love for food. Could you share a little about your childhood and perhaps your fondest food memories?
So I was born in London and grew up here till I was 7. And then I moved to California for around 5 years. And I was really fortunate to grow up in a family who takes food really, really seriously. I mean, in a great way, in a lighthearted way, but in the fact, you know, it's kind of our schedules revolved around the table and what the next meal was going to be. And my granddad and my mom are both fantastic cooks. And I was kind of always drawn to spending time with them in the kitchen and watching what they're doing. And I think that's definitely where my love of food comes from. You know, if you spend that much time around your family, you know, while they're cooking, watching what they're doing, and it interests you, you just kind of get that bug. And then after, it's the enjoyment of eating that and being around the table together. It was really a culture that was embedded in me from an early age. As well, we did travel a bit throughout Europe when I was growing up in England. So, you know, I got to eat some fantastic things and never look back.
Well, you knew from a really young age that you loved to cook and that was what you wanted to do. But it's interesting that you actually tried your hand at psychology for a bit.
Yeah. So when I was time to go to college, I told my parents, OK, I want to go be a chef and I'm going to go to culinary school. And I think it was still that moment where it wasn't such like an ideal path to go down, as you know. I think nowadays, you know, it's so credible to be a chef and our industry is so big. And but yeah, anyway, my parents kind of like, try something else. if it doesn't work out, then we'll kind of support your dream to go be a chef and everything. So they're, you know, basically like choose something and go to university properly for a year. So I went to Richmond University for a year to study psychology. I thought it sounded pretty straightforward at the time, psychology, you know, sit there, listen to people, and turns out it's pretty complicated. A lot of like science and stuff like that. And yeah, I understood pretty quickly. I think in a matter of a month that it wasn't going to be the path for me. I did stay for the whole year. I had a really good time.
It's like almost like a just a year off having fun then.
It was like a year living on a campus, having a good time and not going to a lot of classes. But it didn't deter me at all from what I wanted to do after. So as soon as it was done and I finished the summer, I went to culinary college.
So funny little coincidence, actually. I went to Richmond College and I heard that you're also
Oh.
born in Hammersmith, which is
I
near
am Queen
too.
Charlotte's.
Yeah, so same here.
Okay. I'm not going to
What
ask your age to
coincidence.
know if we were at
Yeah.
a school at the same time.
Now, I'm not going to ask your age either,
Yeah, thank you.
but
Yeah.
yeah, so I thought that was really funny. I thought I've got to
Oh,
tell you
wow.
that. So
Okay.
you were only 18 when you actually started cooking in kitchens, but I guess where
Yes.
things really got exciting for you was when you started at Alain Ducasse in New York.
So obviously college was amazing foundation. You know, I think there's people on both sides of the fence if it's important or not. I think it's was a really good like base to understand when you're coming out of nowhere just from cooking at home or whatnot, what to do. Yeah, so I moved to New York after a few years coming out of college, and I spent like a month in New York kind of going to all the restaurants, spending a couple of days in these kitchens, seeing which one I wanted to work in. And then I got the opportunity to spend a couple of days at Alain Ducasse. He just opened his restaurant, so it's pretty new. And it was incredible. You know, I was like, right away, this is the place I want to work. Had to do a kind of exam on top of the 2-day trial, which I
But
thought was
like a written
interesting.
exam.
Yeah, just like kind of like a base about products, you know, and cooking techniques, just to understand. They wanted to understand at what level of knowledge you were. And
Right.
it was amazing because when I started in that kitchen, the whole team was incredible. It was like one of the best teams I've ever worked within. It was really, really hard, really demanding, really intense, but it was amazing. And it's absolutely where I got the bug of like this high level gastronomic cuisine. You know, I'm working at that intense level where every little detail matters, taking
Yeah.
every product under scrutiny. And yeah, it was an incredible time. I was there for around 4 or 5 years
Yeah.
and I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And do you have like a fun encounter with Alain Ducasse that you can share with us?
Fun. I mean, you know, he's an amazing, amazing guy. I think if this one encounter was probably pretty special for me, was it was like, I think it was once a year, once every couple of years, where all the kind of great guests from the New York restaurant would be invited to for a special dinner. And the chef was away for this moment for whatever personal reasons. Something had happened to the sous chef. So you have the executive sous chef, both not there. Alain Ducasse flies into town. The event still has to go ahead. And all of a sudden I was in charge of the whole thing. And it was kind of terrifying at that moment. You know, it's a really big team. It was a big restaurant. We had 2 Michelin stars there, and I was kind of left responsible for this whole event to happen with Alain Ducasse
Oh
in the room.
gosh.
It went really well. It was amazing. And he has this big like cookbook encyclopedia, and as a thank you after he signed it and gave it to me. And that was really a special moment. You know,
Oh, that is super
he
nice.
said it was all perfect. I don't know if he was just being kind because I was putting myself under such big pressure, but apparently it went well and people seemed happy. So,
Well, I'm sure he was telling you the truth because,
yeah.
someone like him just, it's perfect all the way, right? Like nothing, you
Yeah, and
expect
he's
nothing
amazing. If
left.
you just look at what he's built, and you know, it's incredible the standard that's held throughout all of his
Yeah.
businesses. And yeah, he's
Yeah.
amazing.
And so from there you moved on to Caviar Russe, earning them a
Yes.
Michelin star in 2013. That must have
Yeah,
been
so it's
so
funny
refreshing.
this restaurant. So the Alain Ducasse was called Adore, the restaurant, like the river. It was on 54th and Madison, or between Madison and Park in New York. And then this restaurant I went to next was on Madison between 53rd and 54th. So it's literally
You're
on the
so
same block.
close.
Yeah,
Yeah.
very close. So a bit touchy, you know, they're never so happy when you leave a restaurant, you know, whether you've done a great job or not. You know, it's tough to have a long-standing member of staff leave. So it was funny that I was going just around the corner.
Did you say,
It's
look, I'm
not,
not far away. I'll pop in for a cup of tea
Well, it's nice because I
sometime.
still saw the guys after work, you know, at the local bar, which is good. So it's a really small caviar house, first floor restaurant, so off the street, and their main kind of business is selling caviar, and you know, people could come in, buy tins of caviar, leave, or sit and eat a tin of caviar. And there was also like a little dining room, open kitchen. It was a really beautiful experience. It was the first time I really got to have complete creative freedom and write menus and kind of explore that part of being a chef completely. You know, at Ducasse, you know, you have little moments where your input for the menu and you try things, but this was the first time I really completely was writing menus and trying dishes that I felt made sense and that resonated with me, and amazing and very important experience for me. Also, a moment where I found my love of caviar. You know, it's a product I really appreciate. And it's, you know, of course, spending 3 years working with a kind of a caviar focused establishment. And we did caviar tasting menus to kind of show all of the caviar that they had. And it was a really special few years for me. Especially, the creative kind of bug, I would say, that you get with doing something like that.
And as I mentioned, you earned them a Michelin star. I mean,
Yeah, I found
that
out
was such a
actually
defining
because
moment for you.
so I left there to come to London, and it was only when I landed in London after the Michelin guide came out and I saw that I got a star
Oh, no
after being there for
way.
3 years. So it's kind of bittersweet, but really exciting and a kind of nice, you know, confidence boost right before you start a new job. Like, okay, what we were doing there was
Absolutely.
good, and we were doing the good work. So yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, well, speaking of coming back to London and starting a new job, I mean, you came to Hélène de Rose at the Connaught, two
Yeah.
Michelin star restaurants. How was it for you being back in the UK, and how did you find the difference in the kitchen culture, London versus New York?
So this was a big move for me because basically, the restaurant I was at before, Caviar Roost, it was tiny, right? It was 25 seats, 20, 25. There was four of us in the kitchen, four in the front of house. And I was going to be responsible for a restaurant, firstly, that's in the Connaught Hotel, which is such an iconic establishment. And also for Helen, who's, you know, extremely demanding and knows exactly what she wants. And it was a huge team. You know, we were, you know, 30, 40 people in this team. So it was a big operation to look after. So to say I was a bit scared was an understatement, you know. But it was amazing. It was an amazing, amazing experience. You know, the first probably 6 to 8 months are super hard while you try to integrate yourself in the team. And when you take over a restaurant, you know, you comes along with it that you implement your culture and the things you believe in and just a certain work ethic. And when I say culture, I mean the way you like the kitchen to be run, the way you want people to treat each other. So it's completely natural. A lot of staff move on because that's a big shift in their day-to-day when all of a sudden it's like, no, you don't do things like this. Now you do things this way. And so I found almost anytime you take over a kitchen, you have a huge shift in staff. They move on, you bring in new people. These new people start with the culture that you want and treating people the way that you want. So yeah, it's challenging. You're kind of starting with a whole new team, trying to build something. And so yeah, the first 6, 8 months were tough, but I'd say after that, it was a really amazing journey. I was there for almost 5 years. For the last couple of years, I was helping Helene with a lot more things, overseeing the restaurant in Paris as well, which was amazing because I got to spend so much time in Paris, which is a city I love. And we got to travel a lot. I mean, went to Japan, Mexico, New York, did a lot of things together. And yeah, incredible.
Amazing. And you
Yeah.
mentioned that, you know, the first couple of years was really, really stressful. How did you kind of deal with that stress? How did you cope internally?
You know, I think the stress goes away just by, you know, looking at each day, kind of saying, okay, what am I not happy with? Okay, I'm gonna go in today, I'm gonna tackle this, and this. Well, those things are out of the way, they're fixed, I'm happy with them. And it's just like things the restaurant is never ending, right? There's never a point where you're like, oh, everything's perfect. You know, I'm happy with everything. The second you think that, you know, you start to lose the level. So it's just a lot of or a little amount of sleep, you know, working a lot of lists, and just day by day fixing things, improving things. You know, if you're not happy with a dish, you know, let's focus on changing that dish. if you know the organization, the cleanliness, everything, just trying to improve day by day by day until it's kind of like a moment you come in, you're like, oh wow, things are looking pretty good here. Okay, you know, we're getting somewhere.
Yeah. And what was the difference between, you know, a New York kitchen and a London kitchen? Because they're two completely different cultures as well in terms of work ethic.
Yeah.
People think.
It's different. When I was like at the St. Regis in New York, it's a union, which is a very kind of special environment to work in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like labor laws that are involved in that. Mm-hmm. In Europe, I'd say there's a bit of more freedom for the amount of hours the staff are allowed to work. But you know, once you're in the kitchen at that level, kind of wherever you are in the world, there's a kind of a certain vibe and culture that you can find anywhere in the world. It's a group of people that care extremely passionately about what they're doing that'll kind of stop at nothing to achieve it. And that I think can be translated in any country you go to when you're working at that level.
Yeah, well, you definitely translated it in the greenhouse. So you took the best of both cultures, you applied them when you moved on. How did the opportunity come to you to head up the greenhouse?
Well, probably like it does most of the time, you know, someone kind of calls you discreetly and presents the opportunity to you. I wasn't actually kind of looking to move on, to be honest. I was really happy working with Helen. You know, we're still very close and I have a huge appreciation for her. I think, you know, it just comes that moment where there's an opportunity where you're like, hey, this could be really interesting for me. And it's a beautiful restaurant that has such a great history. I guess I couldn't really turn it down. That opportunity to start a new journey, to really define what my food is and the cuisine I want to cook and the products I want to cook. And that was the opportunity for that. So when that came up, I think it was like maybe 4 or 5, 6 month process of just me being sure it was kind of the right thing I wanted to do. And if
right.
I wanted to make that journey.
Right.
And, I'm glad I did. You know, the way the greenhouse, as most people know, finished is sad, but I have no regrets or no bad feelings about it. It's a period of my life that I hold so closely, so dearly. The people I had in my team, I mean, I'm still so close to them. And also the work we did in that time, I just, you know, I look at it all so fondly, and I think it's was a great foundation for whatever I do next. So
yeah,
it was an amazing journey. It was, again, really hard. You know, when I came there with one of my sous chefs from the Connaught, Pierre, and it was like this mad rush to figure out a menu before we opened. I think we had like two dishes that we kind of had in our head that we were pretty sure were going to be good for the menu. But, you know, you need about 15 to 20. Yeah. And it was like the restaurant closed for, I think, a month, and 2 weeks were kind of touching up some things in the kitchen that I wanted done. And then we had, I think, 2 weeks to work on the menu, and it's just not enough time. You know, I can spend a month working on a dish happily to get it somewhere, and to think about 12 to 14 in 2 weeks, it just wasn't enough time. So we were coming in very early every day until the opening and just trying to figure out this menu. And I think we weren't really happy with the menu when we opened. It was probably about 6 months into it that we started, you know, again, that process, like every day coming in, which dish do we kind of least enjoy on this menu, and then working on that one, and one by one. Yeah, 6 months to a year in that we're like, okay, you know, the menu's starting to make sense for us. There starts to be a continuous story when you eat this menu about what it is and the products that we choose and kind of culture of the spirit of the food. And yeah, it was a beautiful journey.
Yeah, I mean, it was only open for around 2 years, but the buzz...
2 years with me there, yeah.
2 years with you there, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the buzz that was created around it when you were there was huge. I mean, you had earned the restaurant 2 Michelin stars, and in almost every one of my interviews, the greenhouse or your name was mentioned. You must have been just, you know, so, so proud of the success that it had when you were there.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, a lot of people were saying that, like everyone's speaking about this restaurant, and we didn't really have any PR or anything. And yeah. I was really had my head down, and I was really focused on what we were doing every day. And you don't notice it so much, right? And the thing that made me notice people were speaking about it is how many chefs were coming in to eat, which was really, really cool. You know,
it's
first of all, it's a huge compliment that like chefs want to come and see what we're doing. And also, I think it's the most fun as a chef to cook for other chefs. You know they're there because they really want to come and enjoy their big appetites. And it was amazing. No, we had a really good time. Yeah.
Yeah. And the greenhouse was ultimately your own vision of gastronomy and your culture of hospitality. And I really appreciate that you're open to talking about this with me. I know one of your lowest points was the closure of the greenhouse, which happened last year during the pandemic, but it wasn't a result of the pandemic. Did the closure come as a complete surprise to you?
Not a complete surprise. In that exact moment, it was a surprise. You know, I was throughout the pandemic, I was planning on us going back and reopening. Was it a complete surprise overall? Not really. You know, that company's had some issues in the past that most people are aware of in the industry. So it's not overall completely surprising. I was taken off guard for sure that in that moment, all of a sudden it was, you know, kind of lights out. In hindsight, yeah, I guess there were signs along the way, yeah.
Mm. So you're dealing with COVID. No one knows what's hit us. This fantastic restaurant is now closed. Talk to us about that time and, you know, what were you going through personally? What were the kind of thoughts that you were going through?
When I found out the restaurant wouldn't open?
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting deep now.
Yeah.
Honestly, the hardest part about all of it is like when you take everything away, like the hardest part is to tell the team. And that for me was the most like, yeah, emotionally tough moment for me. It was and it was by Zoom as well, which kind of is horrible. You know, it's not personal. You know, I would have normally wanted to take all the guys to the pub, have a couple beers with them first, and then just kind of like softly, you know, make that happen. But it's over Zoom. You're telling everyone they don't have a job anymore and there's going to be really zero to little support for them going forward. Yeah, it's devastating. Personally, I think it took me like kind of 2 weeks to absorb that. And then I was kind of okay. You know, I said, it is what it is. Things happen in life. And I think what made me okay is the fact that I was so happy with what we'd done in that time and the really amazing memories I have. The amazing work that we'd done, the repertoire of dishes that we'd come up with. So if I balance it out, yeah, it's terrible, but they weren't years that were just thrown away. You know, I have a very good memory of everything, so.
Amazing, so you're looking at it really, really positively.
Oh, you have to, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, was part of your healing process getting out there and collaborating as well? Because I know in between the first and second lockdown, I saw you at doTERRA, which was absolutely amazing. Was that part of the process, or is that the collaborations? Were you doing that before?
I'd done collaborations before. In this moment, I was doing a bit more, obviously, because I didn't have the restaurant to think about. We were in between lockdowns, so it was kind of permitted to go to countries to cook. So I was going to Greece a bit to cook with chefs I know, doing these four hands dinners like at doTERRA. And for me, it was amazing because ultimately I just wanted to be in a kitchen, right? It's like going through a bit of the first lockdown and just the opportunity to be back in a kitchen, cooking again was incredible.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I just wanted to briefly talk about doTERRA. You know, I was lucky enough to go and between you and Raphael, it was literally a 3-star Michelin evening.
Oh, thank you.
And it was absolutely fantastic. Loved it. And you've been doing several of these, as you mentioned, but it's very different being in your own kitchen. How have you found it working in someone else's kitchen? I know how meticulous you are. Do you feel a sense of loss of control when it's not your space?
It really depends. Like at doTERRA, you know, normally if it's possible, you go to see the kitchen before and you try to understand what's going on and what's the level of the restaurant. At doTERRA, you know, I went in there and really did some dishes we were doing before, pretty technical because the level of the restaurant is super, super high, the professionalism of the staff, and they have all the equipment to achieve what you want. I was really excited to do that collaboration with him just because I know him and his team, they work at such a high level that we could really have fun with it, deliver something quite high level, and know we're still going to have a good time, which I think ultimately we did. You know, I think the guests had a lot of fun, but we also did, so that was important.
Yeah.
And I've done other events where, you know, you get them to send you photos of the kitchen because it's in another country. And you can understand pretty quickly that you should probably keep the menu pretty simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to adapt, you know. I think you never want to kind of try to do something that's unachievable and, you know, upset anybody. So
yeah. Well, it's difficult because, you know, presentation is such a big part of what you do as well. And, you know, when you don't have your own, you know, like serving plates, for example, and, you know, you have really different kind of, you know, crockery to work with. Do you find that like interesting and challenging, or do you find it really frustrating and, you know, wish you could just take all your own crock with you?
Yeah, it's funny because I just like a white plate. A plain white plate, basically. I know it's very, you know, people love like different colored plates and all of this and all that. If my dream is just a blank white plate, you know, where the beauty and the naturalness and the colors of the food can really shine.
Right. But that How often do you get that?
It's never happens, actually. Not a lot of people are using plain white plates. You know, everyone, it's like really funky organic stuff. That it's just like, it's not my style, but it's interesting. It's okay. It's more tricky when you have certain dishes that need a certain like shape of bowl, because the depth of it and the width of it will dictate how much of a certain ingredient needs to go in there. Mm. And then the balance of the dish can be thrown off as a result of that. So sometimes, you know, before events, we'll ask, can you send us photos of your stock of plates so we can understand which dishes will be possible or not. But for the most part, you know, you just kind of make do with what's there and go with it.
Yeah. Well, it's been a really good way for you to keep current, and, you know, they're all short-term sort of forehand dinners, and, you know, and you've been lucky to fit them in between your lockdowns. So there are so many casualties that are, you know, that we're hearing about on a daily basis within hospitality. What sort of advice would you give to people who have lost their businesses or their jobs?
That's tough to give advice in this moment. Is really tricky. You know, what I think is important is stay positive. I really do believe that when we're allowed to, the industry is going to come back in a strong way. Mm. I think we've seen that when there's the moments between lockdowns when restaurants can open.
Yeah,
the people are super excited to go out and eat and drink and enjoy hospitality that the UK has to offer. It's incredible. So I think everyone will be okay. It's just going to be a matter of time, and you got to stay positive. And that's what I'm doing. You know, it's a weird moment in the world, you know, and there's a lot of people in the same boat, but things will bounce back to normal. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned your team earlier on, and, you know, you were so concerned about them. One of the first things that you did after the greenhouse closure was try and place your team in other jobs as well, at a time when there was so much uncertainty for you too. And your main concern was your team. And it really, you know, it really shows how much love that you have for the people around you and the team that you work with.
A huge amount. Especially the greenhouse, it's funny one, like we were so close, you know. We were lucky that we had a five dinners, four lunches, so, you know, we had the same team every day, and you get really close because of that. You know, it's not some 7-day schedule where kind of each day is a bit different who's working, and we were really like, felt like a tight-knit family. It was amazing. Yeah. I did try to help them get jobs, but I mean, they all got snatched up really, really quickly, which I'm really proud for them. And they all they all ended up in great places. So,
yeah. And you're going to snatch them back again at some point.
I won't say that because they're working for some people I know well.
You've got their numbers.
If they choose to come back for me, that's their prerogative. You know, they're all adults and can make the decision.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
But yeah, I would be so blessed to work with any of them again. They're all super talented and
Yeah. So you've prided yourself on the teams that you've built and the culture in your kitchen. Talk to us about how you go about building that dream team and creating the culture that works so well for you.
I think in regards to creating the culture, that really comes from you. You know, you have to understand how you want people to treat each other within your team. And you can only, I think, do that if you yourself do that, you know, about making people understand to be kind to each other, you know, seeing when someone's having a shitty day, take 2 minutes to go over and check up on them, right? It's these little things that create that camaraderie and, you know, but it's by no means an easy job what we do. So kind of having everyone's back is super important. And I hope, and, you know, everyone in my team understands that, and we see each other doing that, and it creates everyone to kind of do the same. Like any family, we have our moments where we fight and we bicker and everything. But I think for the most part, more often than not, everyone gets along really well. And that's really important to me. It's also important to me that we have a good time. We're going to spend, you know, 15, 16 hours a day in a kitchen together. I want to have a good time. I want to see some smiles during the day. I want to laugh a bit during the day. During service, yeah, we need to be super serious, super focused, but there's no reason doing what we do that we can't enjoy the process as well. No reason at all. So
yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I mean, alongside the obvious skills, what other qualities do you look for in young chefs?
Any young chef, you know, if you're a young chef, it's going to take you time to understand the way to work. So, you know, it's more about character traits, I think, if it's a really young chef, because they haven't had the time to maybe learn the skills. But they're a nice person, if they're motivated, if you can see they have the drive, they're going to come in early, the way they present themselves, if they're clean. After, when it comes to the skills, they're going to learn that, you know, that kind of becomes the job of the restaurant to teach them that and teach them the way that you want things done. But attitude is huge for a young chef. If you go in the kitchen, to have the proper attitude, because that's tricky to change. You know, you can give someone a hard time as much as you want, but if they have a shitty attitude, it's going to be hard to shake that out of them.
Yeah. What are your plans? You know, once we're out of lockdown, are you going to be going with the Four Hands Dinners full on, or are you thinking about opening your own restaurant?
I am thinking about opening a restaurant. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's something, it's not completely 100% developed, so I don't want to get too much into it, but I definitely want to kind of have something up and going by the end of the year.
Okay, that's so good to hear.
Yeah,
because I was thinking about, you know, following you to Dubai and New York and all these other
you can still do
places.
That. You know, in the meantime, if we're allowed to travel, I'll definitely be going on some other trips to cook with some other chefs I know and stuff.
Yeah.
I love doing that. You know, first of all, I love traveling, and then, you know, surrounding yourself in a kitchen with a different team, it's super fun. It's inspiring. You know, you see new things, meeting new people. So, and I can feel already people are planning that, you know, people are already talking about doing some chef collaboration dinners, which is really fun. So.
Yeah. It's amazing to kind of keep that vibe going as well, and relationships with other chefs build up.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So another thing that, you know, a high that you shared with me is how you've got to travel the world as a result of being a chef. Where would you say you've drawn the most inspiration from?
So, I mean, one of the places food wise that totally blew my mind, which probably most chefs say the same, is Japan.
Yeah.
That was just incredible. And it's also kind of frustrating, because when you go there, you go to the fish market and you see the product and it's just, it's so perfect, but you know, you can't have it in the UK. I'm not saying the UK doesn't have great products, but the quality of product and the respect for product in Japan is just another level. And then you go out to eat in some of the restaurants and the way that product is just kind of left alone. It's so beautifully and simply prepared. It's just incredible. It's super inspiring.
Yeah.
Mexico, I found really inspiring too. I mean, Mexican cuisine is one of my favorites in the world. And that was really amazing also. I think wherever you go, you can find some inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And who are the chefs that you most admire in the industry?
I mean, Thomas Keller is one that's just like the man. I've been really lucky to eat at a French Laundry. It was actually the first 3-star I ever ate in, and I've eaten in Per Se quite a few times, Bouchon, and everything just seems perfect. I mean, the guy is amazing. He builds teams and runs with such a system that there's like no room for error. It's just incredible what he does. Alain Ducasse, also incredible. I mean, the list of amazing chefs there are now, it's super inspiring. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, on that topic, it's funny, because exactly the way you just described Thomas Keller and Alain Ducasse is the way I've heard a lot of people describe you.
That's interesting. I'm surprised, but thank you.
Absolutely. 100% true.
Thank you.
It's all recorded. So you probably go back over my interview.
Yeah.
So Post this pandemic, how do you think the restaurant industry is going to change?
It's so hard to tell. You know, I would love to be optimistic and think it's going to end the pandemic. Restaurants are going to be full. People are going to be going out. But I think there will be some casualties. I don't think we've seen all the restaurant closures yet that are going to happen, unfortunately. But, you know, I said before in a couple other interviews I've done, I really think that this industry is filled with like super creative and super resilient people, you know, like fighting people. You know, there's so many people in restaurant, you have this term just like make it happen. You know, we say it all the time, like make it happen. And I think that's kind of a culture and a belief we have in this industry is make it happen. And I think that will really translate to what's coming next. You know, everyone's going to make it happen, bounce back, be creative. You can see it now. Everyone's completely adapted their businesses to doing take-home formulas. So I think it's going to look different for a little while, but it will be back and strong, I have no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people are doing home kits and deliveries, and I think some of those have really taken off, and some of the chefs, we were talking about this earlier, they're doing
Yeah.
incredibly well from, you know, just completely changing their, you know,
It's
their
incredible.
platform.
Yeah. When I see and the high level that people are doing, I saw the one on Instagram the other day from Core, and it's just shocking. I mean, it's really, it looks like people are eating in the restaurant with the level of the food that they've managed to get to
Oh
people's
wait,
homes.
so Core is doing deliveries now?
Yeah, and it looks stunning. Like
Oh, I
I'm
had
shocked by it.
no
Yeah.
idea.
And
Wow.
then the
Okay.
detail, you know, they've done, it's even like the little bouquet of flowers that you have when you eat there. No, it looks incredible. So yeah, to see how people, I mean, it's such a good example to see how people have adapted their business like that. And it's such
Yeah.
a high level. You can feel sure that out of any industry, this one's gonna keep fighting till they're back to normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we like to see, a good fighting spirit.
Exactly.
So, Alex, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Well, actually, before I had my, you know, amazing career in psychology, one of the things I was really into as well was music. And when I was living in California, I was actually in a couple of punk bands,
Oh,
and I was
cool.
really into playing guitar. I love music. I thought at that age, skateboarding and playing punk music would be my life. I'm glad I got it out of my system because I don't know how good of a look that would be now, but yeah, that was maybe it's part of like the creative thing or whatever. But yeah, I really for a long time thought, oh, okay, music is my future. I'm gonna play, you know, punk and rock. And yeah, so when I was pretty young, that was like my main focus. But
That is awesome.
cooking took over in the end. I know.
Did you like the Sex Pistols?
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think Johnny Rotten was in I'm a Celebrity at some point.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was
I've heard
like
of that show, but I haven't seen it. So I will check though after this.
it was a long time ago though.
Okay.
And it's really funny you mentioned the guitar because I've actually written down in my notes guitar with a question mark because you actually come across as a guitar playing sort of guy. Do you play at
Okay.
all
Well,
now?
I haven't played for ages, but like a year ago, I saw a ukulele shop close to where I live and I bought a ukulele. Why not? But it's kind of
They're
just
so
sits
cute.
ornamentally in my living room, and I haven't really gotten into it. But I will at some point. I guess now's a good time. I have time, but
Yeah, my sister was here from New York actually over New Year, and she brought a ukulele with her, and it's the cutest little thing, and she
super
absolutely loves
cute. It's a nice sound. You know, it's not too aggressive. So yeah,
it.
maybe this week I'll try to pick that up a bit more.
Yeah. Let me know. We'll record you doing it and we'll put it
Oh,
up.
yeah,
That'd be
I'll be
awesome.
right onto that. Yeah.
Well, Alex, it's been so much fun chatting with you
Thank you so
today.
much.
You've
It's been a
been an
pleasure.
absolutely brilliant guest. And
Thank you.
guys, you can follow Alex on Instagram. Alex, just remind me what your handle is, your Instagram handle.
ADILLS1.
Thank you. And I'm at Posh Nosh Gal. Guys, if you enjoyed today's interview, please share, rate, and review. It really helps other people find me. Thank you so much, Alex.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure.